Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, June the 1st, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thank you for joining us this evening. I hope you are all doing well and staying safe and healthy. We have a special guest, Mr. Jeff Hall, a combat veteran of the 1991 war with Iraq and presently the National Employment Director of DAV, Disabled American Veterans. But before introducing Mr. Hall, let's first go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How's it going?
Hey, David. Good. Doing really well tonight, and hope you're doing well as well. And I hope everybody out there who's listening to the show tonight is also surviving with everything that's been going on. Can't believe it's June already. Halfway home to the end of the year. It's been a difficult year so far with the COVID-19 pandemic and over 100,000 Americans who have died from the virus. Then on top of all that, since the tragic death of George Floyd in Minneapolis a week ago this evening, we've seen protests, riots, and looting in many cities across the country. It's very tragic, and it's a difficult time for all of us here in America. We hope our leaders across the country will help guide the nation to better days of both justice and peace. Now let's turn our show tonight. And I want to remind that everybody that this is a call-in show. We welcome your views, your comments, your questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And we do have a guest tonight, Mr. Jeff Hall, so if there's anything you want to ask Mr. Hall during the show, please give us a call, again, at 1-888-627-6008. Now back to you, David, and please introduce our guest this evening.
Thanks, Richard. Yes, it's our privilege to have Mr. Jeff Hall on our show today. Jeff Hall is the National Employment Director for the more than 1 million member DAV, or Disabled American Veterans Organization. From the DAV National Headquarters located in Cold Spring, Kentucky, he oversees special employment initiatives, and he works with private and public sector entities to develop and build partnerships to address joblessness and underemployment, as well as facilitate job fairs and lead efforts to connect veterans and employers. Mr. Hall joined the U.S. Army in 1988, and on March the 11th, 1991, while serving in Operation Desert Storm, he was wounded when his vehicle struck an Iraqi anti-tank mine, resulting in concussion blast injuries to his lower and upper extremities. Following medical treatment and intensive physical therapy, Mr. Hall returned to duty and was honorably discharged in 1992. He joined DAV's professional staff as a National Service Officer in 1993 at the Chicago, Illinois DAV National Service Office. Then in 1996, he was assigned to the position of National Appeals Officer at the Board of Veterans Appeals in Washington, D.C., and was appointed Assistant Supervisor in Louisville, Kentucky in 1997. Then in 1999, he was appointed Supervisor of the Chicago, Illinois DAV National Service Office. In 2004, he was simultaneously promoted to Supervisor of the New York National Service Office and National Area Supervisor of Area 10. He was appointed Assistant National Legislative Director in 2010 and served in that capacity until his current appointment in 2014 as the Director of National Employment. So let's welcome Jeff Hall to the Veterans News Hour. Jeff, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, and thank you guys for having me on the show. You know, whenever someone reads that bio, it just makes me feel that much older. you know, I've been with DAV. I've been very fortunate to have had the experiences I've had, both in, you know, growing up, then the military, and then certainly a lifetime of service back to disabled veterans. Brothers and sisters, you know, that were also injured in the military service. And I've just been very, very fortunate. And so whenever I hear that, I just think, man, it just makes me feel that much older. But you know, always been in a position of high responsibility and in caring for our nation's disabled veterans and their families. So I'm happy to be here.
Well, it's our privilege, Jeff, and we'd like to thank you for your decades of service, first in the Army, in the war in Iraq, and then for DAV and many different positions of responsibility. Now, I know there's a lot you can tell us about the DAV's many programs, but how about if we start with just kind of a general overview? Tell us about DAV, its membership, and its mission, and then we'll dive into some details.
Sure, absolutely. Well, as you had stated correctly, DAV, Disabled American Veterans, we were founded in 1920 and chartered by Congress in 1932 with the sole mission of assisting veterans and their families in a variety of ways. So we're a nonprofit that does provide a lifetime of support to veterans of all generations. Every year, in fact, we help transform more than 1 million lives in positive ways by helping them gain access to health care, disability, financial, housing, educational benefits that they've earned, as well as helping them secure meaningful employment. So we've been doing that, and since we were founded in 1920, as you realize, this is our centennial anniversary. It has been a tough year starting out in a variety of ways that were pointed out, you know, for all of us in so many ways, and it doesn't look like it's getting any easier as days go on. But on the veteran front, especially with the COVID-19 virus pandemic and people, affected in multiple ways, one of the main messages that we wanted veterans to understand out there is that DAV, while certainly we have to follow guidelines and protocols, we weren't able to keep our offices open for, you know, that in-person walk-in service like other businesses. But our assistance that we've been provided has been virtually uninterrupted, whether you need help with, you know, filing your claim with the VA or have questions about a claim that was pending when all of the things, you know, the closure started happening, or you have an appeal pending, any of those types of things, we still provide access to our national service offices that are out there, and as well as our employment, which I have the privilege of being the director of that program. And one of the main things, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but just to touch on it, we do coast-to-coast career fairs, 140 of them, in fact, each year. And there's just a few of us on our staff. We have a very lean staff. That's a lot of time living, you know, on the road, but I wouldn't have it any other way than to be out there and working with veterans, you know, face-to-face. In this particular process, obviously, that's been disrupted. We had to do a quick pivot back in March, and thankfully, we were able to do that with our partner, Recruit Military, and did a quick pivot to convert everything to virtual career fair. So we're still providing that engagement between veterans and employers on that end of it as well. So those are some of the key areas, healthcare, disability, employment, that of course, DAV has been providing for nearly 100 years now, really 100 years.
Wow, that's an impressive history, as you described. So going back to the veterans of World War One, needing your services. Now you've got more than 1 million members, and as I understand it, almost 1,300 chapters across the country.
Correct.
What's the criteria for membership?
Well, what we're looking at is any veteran that was injured during active military service. Now, many of them believe that they don't qualify for membership. And ultimately, if you're a veteran out there, as an example, and you wonder if you're qualified, is to simply join. You can join online. The criteria is explained there, but you have to be a veteran that was injured during a period of war. And really, when you cover 100 years, you're covering a lot of periods of war, probably longer than what people would really imagine. For instance, I still look at myself as somewhat of a current veteran because that period of time from when I went in, when it was declared, you know, the Persian Gulf War, 1990 and forward, really we've been in a steady pace, because when we entered into the post 9/11 period, it's just been 20 years of constant war, or people in a, you know, wartime situation in a wartime theater. So those criterias are that you had to be, you know, wounded, ill, or injured during a period of active service during wartime, and simply go to DAV.org, and you could pick up the criteria there.
Yeah, that is an important point that you made. You served during Desert Shield, Desert Storm. I was on active duty at that time. I went to Iraq in 1992. The war itself was over, but the United States was enforcing a no-fly zone, and it was still a situation where we're operating under Desert Storm orders. And then in 1996, Cobalt Towers was bombed. So we've been pretty much in a war or war-related environment for 30 years in Iraq. That's just an amazing time.
It's
so
crazy.
You've got a lot of veterans you're helping. Jeff, tell us more about the projects that are under your purview. You're the Director of National Employment. What would you like veterans to know about some of their options and programs that DAV provides?
Yeah. So, I mean, under the employment program, now I was working on our legislative staff in Washington, D.C., where I was covering the portfolio that included veterans' disability benefits and the claims process. So any kind of legislation or any kind of activity on the Hill that involved those issues, I was there front and center, whether it was testifying regularly before the House or Senate Veterans Affairs Committee or being at roundtable discussions. And that was always great. And that was a nice piggyback on the 17 years I had prior as a National Service Officer, which was a benefits counselor out in the field. Moving into employment, back in 2014, at that time we had decided that we needed to enter the arena in full force of employment for veterans, because at that time, and I think we're still going at a steady pace of around 200,000 people that are being separated from active military service each year.
Wow.
And so with that, DAV, certainly being no stranger to providing those services and things like that, we wanted to be there front and center to provide assistance in helping veterans and their spouses certainly connect with meaningful employment. So with that in mind, that is when we launched our program officially, in this time, really just 6 years ago now. It seems like yesterday, but at the same time, we've covered a lot of ground in part of that. We have a variety of tools and resources that we provide. It's easy to get to at www.jobs.dav.org. When you go there, there's a variety of things you can do. You can directly engage with employers through the host of things under the Veteran and Spouses tab. Companies that we work with directly simply go there. It could take you to their military employment program or their job board, things of that nature. We have a job online job board that has more than 200,000 active opportunities right now. That constantly fluctuates depending on the companies that post those jobs in there. It is something that is constantly moving. We have tips, tools, and resources in way of helping you with with your resume if you need that type of assistance, and a host of things. Also, what you'll find is our career fair schedule. When you click on the job fairs tab, it'll simply open up to the full schedule. You can either see it in part or you can click on the tab for a full schedule, and you can see that. Now, as I had mentioned, currently, with the COVID-19 virus situation, we had to do a quick pivot and convert everything physical to virtual. And we started that out at a slow pace, doing it, converting them through March. And then we extended it out pretty right away. We had to move it out to the end of April. And it just seemed like every week we were, you know, extending it further. And that has everything to do with everything, guidelines from CDC to a host of things, venues that were hosting a particular event, maybe they've changed or they're not going to be able to host those. So at the current time, we have converted all of our physical job fairs for the remainder of the year to virtual job fairs. Now, what I want people to understand, if you've never participated in a virtual career fair, it can seem strange or hey, Jeff, how does that work? And I can assure you, you can go on. We do a webinar through Recruit Military every Monday night that kind of answers a lot of those questions. It's easy to sign up for. It's hosted by some wonderful people over in Recruit Military that can walk you through the process and take away some of the anxiety. But essentially what you're looking at is you register the day of the event, you enter into the career fair at the designated time. As an example, we have one coming up this week on Thursday that'll be 11 to 3 p.m. Mountain Time for anybody in the Colorado Springs area. Once you enter into the job fair, you're going to enter into a public, you know, an area where it's going to show you all the employers, and you can simply click on whatever employer, including DAV if you need benefits assistance. Click on that company's name. It'll take you into their booth, and it's a public chat forum. You can see all the conversation going, or you can click on any representative in there, and you can talk to them privately. You know, we always encourage people to upload their resume because that's what companies look at. When you enter our booth, if it's a nationwide event, I don't know if you're entering the job fair, you know, from Jacksonville, Florida, or Los Angeles, or Seattle. So it's always nice to, you know, that if I know that about you by clicking on your resume, I know he or she is probably, you know, residing in this particular area. And that can help in way of questions of connecting them to the right people. So without belaboring the point, the virtual career fairs, we're just thrilled that we're able to provide that ongoing assistance where veterans can continue to engage with companies. And again, inside of that message is the heart of the matter, which is companies are still hiring. We know and understand it's a difficult struggle for a lot of people right now who have lost their employment. They're in a furloughed situation. Maybe they're uncertain if they're even going to be called back. We understand that. But we have to keep moving forward. Veterans are a very resilient community to begin with, as you guys probably know that from yourselves. But in doing so, we want them to know that companies are still hiring. They still want to engage, and they wouldn't pay to come to our career fairs and have a booth there if they weren't interested in seeking your talents and skills that they know that they can only find in those men and women that have worn the uniform. So with that, I mean, that's kind of an overarching way of looking at the employment program. But again, at the heart of it, it is we didn't limit that particular aspect of it to, you know, service disabled veterans. Of course, those individuals are always at the heart and at the top of our priority list because of who we are. But we had to look at the employment arena, the employment sector, with really open eyes because men and women coming into career fairs, as an example, perhaps don't want to identify one way or the other. They will at some point when the time is appropriate. But our career fairs are for active duty, Guard and Reserve members, veterans, and their spouses.
I see. Now, Jeff, you were giving the example of the virtual job fair. The virtual job fair of interest to Colorado Springs, Colorado area veterans. Now, would they go to jobs.dav.org or would they go to another website to access
that? Yeah, they go to jobs.dav.org, and the first tab the top tab on that page, on that landing page, will be job fairs. Click on that, and you'll see right in the center of the screen the most current, because that continuously updates itself. The top one right now is this week, and that's Colorado Springs. You just click on that. It's a hyperlink. It'll take you right to the registration page.
I see. Now, you've mentioned various employers that are involved, and I know in your bio the description of private and public sector entities you're working with them. Mm-hmm. Any insights or info that you could offer to veterans about maybe particular industries or companies or government agencies that seem to have more job opportunities?
I think there's obviously a lot of activity in the healthcare industry. That's one that I think is just constantly moving. But as well as that, a lot of government contracting type agencies or companies that deal with that, like Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, many of these companies out there are just, I mean, they hire a lot of people. They have a lot of work. They do a lot of work for the government in way of contracting. And so they're always looking. And so when you look even at a physical career fair or a virtual career fair, these types of industries, logistics, warehousing, anything, moving goods, warehousing, that type of stuff, that's always going to be a big thing. And there's a lot of that that goes on in the military. Same thing, you know, with working with specialty fields like, you know, aeronautics and anything dealing with that, aircraft maintenance, all of that. Healthcare is, again, one that's just always represented at virtual or physical job fairs. And I will tell you one recently, the Department of Veterans Affairs had put out an urgent message asking, you know, anybody that had a way to get reach a lot of veterans, which we did, to let them know that they were in need at that particular point, you know, urgently hiring over 5,000 healthcare workers. That was at the beginning of the COVID-19 situation. I believe it was part and parcel to the situation because they just knew that they were going to have to ramp up their efforts. But again, the Department of Veterans Affairs is always represented at our job fairs in one way or the other. Now, I haven't seen them much in our virtual job fairs, but again, that's just everybody's really learning about it on both sides of the table. Not everybody's caught on to the fact that you can come to a virtual job fair and interact the same way as you would an in-person job fair. So, again, that's just the more we do those, the more that's going to get out, and companies alike are going to start coming to it because that's where veterans are going. So, I would just say if you're looking in logistics, healthcare, trucking, warehousing, those types of things where you're moving goods, anything tech-related, computer-related, you're going to find a lot of that at our career fairs for sure.
I see. Yeah, I read a press release about a month ago now, Jeff, from the VA, and they were sort of bragging up how they had just recently hired a lot more healthcare providers, a big spike in their hiring related to the need under the COVID-19 pandemic. But as we've reported on this show over the last 3 years, it seems like the VA's healthcare, healthcare side of the VA is perpetually understaffed by literally tens of thousands. So hopefully they will connect with your organization and participate. Sounds like a great opportunity. Now, Jeff, you worked in many different roles with DAV. In addition to the employment, anything that you'd like to share with our listeners about maybe DAV services or just your own advice and experience you'd like to share with veterans? You know, many veterans have a tough time transitioning from active duty back to civilian life, and just any advice you would have for them?
Yeah, I don't want to go too deep down the rabbit hole because I can talk all day about it, and I want to be mindful of your time and listeners' time here. But I would tell you, I've been in this business a long time, almost 30 years. I knew nothing about DAV and the services that they provided until they wanted to interview me to come to work for them. Essentially, I didn't know about the service program and that it was a free service that they offer veterans of all generations to be able to help be your voice, your advocate, to help you get your earned benefits. I mean, yeah, I was a little bit under, an at-ease moment where I thought, well, I was wounded. I mean, how hard is it going to be for them to decide a claim and award me my benefits? But the fact of the matter is if it wasn't for DAV, because when I had gotten out, I was separated out of Fort Hood, Texas, and I moved back to Indianapolis area, and I had filed my claim before I left with no instruction from the VA person that was there at the time. Now, a lot has changed, you know, since then in the transition assistance program, but if it wasn't for DAV, my claim, who knows how long it would have taken, because DAV was the one that had told me, you know, my claim was in an abandoned claims file, but they got it resurrected and they got it in front of somebody because it had gone on for more than 8 months at that particular time. Wow. Now, as years waned on and things like that, you know, a lot more claims come into the system, especially post 9/11 and things like that. DAV has always been a strong advocate along with other service organizations up there in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill and other avenues to be able to shape, mold, and better, you know, the process or the laws and regulations that surround that. And so what I would like people to know is, you know, that nothing exists from nothing, right? I mean, you're always going to have somebody there fighting on your behalf. You can be the smartest person in the room, and it doesn't matter. If you don't work within the process itself and understand the law, the regulation, and all of those meticulous points that go into awarding a benefit to somebody, or the reason why something cannot be awarded, then you need to have an advocate to speak out for you. And DAV, frankly, are the best on the block as far as the training and programs that we have and assistance that we provide. And I will tell you, to be a DAV National Service Officer, there is no we have a one-of-a-kind training program. To get into the program, you have to meet the qualifications, number one. And when you go through the program, it's a 16-month on-the-job training or apprenticeship program. So you're not going to just walk in and start handling claims and things like that. There's a lot of training in it, and it includes medicine, and it includes law, all the regulations and everything that go with it, how the system even works before you can even start working with individuals. Because the last thing we want is to get untrained people in there who could injure somebody in the process. So we're very well trained. We're expertly trained, and then you don't get out of training after that. We just keep the fire burning with our ongoing structured and continuing training program, which lasts for 32 months, and then you get recycled at the end of that. You get the award is to get to start over and start the whole training again, because laws, regulations, medicine. I mean, you got to look at things like Agent Orange, and that may be out of date for a lot of people, but I would just tell you, Agent Orange, when I came in, there was about seven presumptive conditions on the Agent Orange list, and they used to, if you claimed one of them, they would send you this crudely drawn map of Vietnam, and you would have to put a red X on places you thought you were located in country, and then if it met the criteria, you were then, okay, presumed to have been exposed to Agent Orange. DAV and other organizations kept the fire stoked on the VA to get them to finally concede that if you were in country, you were exposed. It didn't matter what part of it. There was wind drift, all those things that go into it. And so we've kept that fire burning up until the most recent, which is the Blue Water Navy, which DAV was one of those organizations that finally got that legislation passed. How many years after Vietnam? That just got passed. So
right.
This many years later, it just never ends. And I don't like to paint that dismal picture, but the idea I want people to understand is if it wasn't for our service and legislative programs and working behind the scenes where so many people don't realize that, we wouldn't have the benefits that we have today. So, again, if you need assistance, if you're currently thinking about filing a claim, you don't know where to start, you've got something pending, but DAV may not have been your appointed representative or anything along that way, you can go to a special website section that we have set up. Go to www.benefitsquestions.org. When that comes up, you just type in your zip code, and that'll connect you with the office nearest you. And I highly recommend hitting that submit an email button and becoming part of it, and somebody will get back with you, even during this difficult time.
Well, Jeff, that's an impressive training program for your service officers there. I know from a perspective as a lawyer who's represented veterans, how incredibly complex the regulations and procedures, and like you mentioned, it's continually changing. Just Agent Orange is one example. And, you mentioned the Blue Water Navy. Now we're still seeing ongoing fights by veterans who served on Guam. We've seen with the current generation of veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, the so-called open air burn pits, the contamination, which that generation has, it's described as like their generation's Agent Orange, and hopefully they're not going to be having to fight the VA and Congress for 20 or 30 years like the Vietnam veterans did. Any thoughts on that? Anything you can share about your insights and DAV's perspective on things like the open-air burn pits or Guam, anything, any pending issues, in other words?
Well, we're obviously deeply concerned about anything when it comes to veterans that have contracted an illness, or certainly an injury, but an illness from that they don't know at the time that they're contracting an illness. I will tell you the difference in times of service. When I was in the first Gulf War, we were burning things openly because that's what we had. Was I stoked in a fire? Yeah, I was one of the guys just like the others that had we had burn pit detail. We just kept moving, and whatever garbage, we had to burn it. you don't know at the time you're following an order or directive and things like that, and you don't know that, you know, you're later going to contract something. Now, I'm not saying in my own particular case I did contract something, but I got out in 92, and I started having issues that were unexplainable, and it wasn't until 2017. What is that, 25 years? Is that 25 years? 25 years later, I'm seeing a pulmonologist because of problems that I'm having, and the one doctor looked straight at me and said, did you ever spend time in the Middle East? And I said, well, yeah. And he said, were you ever exposed to burn pits? And I said, burn pits and oil well fires. And it changed the course of everything. Of course, I wasn't even being in the business and helping veterans in a variety of ways, I still wasn't equating that to that particular exposure. And I, you know, you would think you'd be smarter than that, especially being in the business. But so if it's that difficult for somebody that has knowledge of the system and the regulations and the laws that go into it, how difficult is it for the veteran, the actual layman out there? And that's why it's so imperative that we have the programs and training that we do. And so, yes, we're gravely interested in the burn pit regulations. We've been heavily involved in the ongoing discussions and things like that because, as you said, it could be, you know, easily equated to an Agent Orange. And if we learn nothing else from Vietnam, I mean, we learned a lot, but if we learn nothing beyond the fact that this is not the way to treat veterans, if we didn't learn anything beyond that, then obviously that shaped or created a different path forward for a lot of veterans in a variety of ways, whether it was how to treat them when they came home, to the health care and all of that. I mean, we didn't get to where we are, and hey, the VA has a lot of work ahead of them. They are always, it'll be an ongoing thing. And to your point about health care as an example, I've received all of my health care from the VA since I got out of the military for a host of things. I can honestly tell you, barring a couple of locations, and it always comes down to bedside manner, you know, the actual customer service type end of it. But as far as my medical portion of it, my personal experience has always been great, and so I've been a staunch advocate for other veterans to make sure they get enrolled and use the VA health care. Many believe a lot of the stories, and I'm not saying that a lot of them are certainly not founded, because they are. People write their own histories, and VA is one of them. But, you know, at some point, you've got to enter into the system, because we would not have the healthcare system if it wasn't. It was built on the blood, sweat, and tears of the veterans that came before you. We are in charge of making sure it stays in shape, that they receive the proper funding, and all of those things that go along with them in operating. But it by far is not a perfect system, and has certainly imperfections. But, you know, that message to veterans is get involved with an organization like DAV. Come out and see what we're about. Get involved, and you might just find out that your voice is bigger than you think it is.
Those are all great points, Jeff, and I just to follow on your points about the healthcare system and the importance of veterans being involved. Organizations like DAV play a really big role to bring accountability to the VA. We know back in what was it, about 2012, 2014 time frame, when the healthcare scandals first became prominent, mm-hmm. The Phoenix VA, and then it kind of spread around the country because there was the long wait times, then there was the falsified data about wait times and understaffing. But it's really the veteran organizations that really have to force Congress to do its job. And because otherwise Congress can easily find other things to talk about or to do nothing about. And so mm-hmm. they, as you say, it's important to keep stoking the fire. Now, DAV has a lot of impressive programs representing veterans with disability benefits, job trainings, other things that you'd like to share with our listeners about DAV as far as services or just other general advice.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, one of our flagship program, or I should say our flagship program, is our service program. And that is deep-rooted in, you know, built on the simple fact, I don't want to oversimplify it, but on the fact that after World War One, veterans came home and, you know, they were promised a war bonus And, you know, they didn't get it. And so they had to, here they were, you know, with horrendous injuries from, you know, everything from mustard gas to amputations. And of course, the medicine was a lot different then, we all know. But what did they have in place? They didn't have a system in place. And so it took the individuals, I know this is kind of an ironic segue, but with everything going on, you know, and the civil unrest and everything that's happening right now, it takes march can make a difference. And that made a difference for the veterans when they marched on Washington to get the benefits that they were earned. You know, if you're not familiar with, for those that aren't familiar, rather, with Washington, D.C., imagine the mall that was filled with, all the way up to the Capitol, filled with shanties and tents of veterans that were, you know, picked up and moved there to wait. And if that isn't a visual example that really should scare people, but at the same time, the positive outcome was they made a difference in doing so to get what was rightfully earned by them. Now, fast forward all of these years, our service program, again, with the training I had mentioned earlier, it's the flagship program of DAV, there's no question. And our service officers are experts in the business of VA law and regulation as far as the process. Now, it's made it a whole host better over the years, and we were right there at the forefront. I was still working on our legislative staff at the time, but working closely with our service staff when the backlog of claims, you know, really peaked out at, you know, well over a million claims that were backlogged in the system. And so the wait times were terrible. And we had to work with the VA. We had to keep that pressure on Congress and get that support to make the VA change in certain ways. Well, converting things to a digital paperless process was a huge, huge boon for that. Being able to file your claims online is one thing, but being able to process claims that are, you know, that are there, that are digital, is so much easier for their, you know, their rating specialists and things like that. And so, yeah, our service program is definitely one that everybody should take notice to, as well as our voice on Capitol Hill with our legislative staff. The one thing I would like to just, if I could, at least throw this in there, is our voluntary services program. It's a huge program for DAV. It is something that, you know, as far as helping people and having other veterans helping other veterans, it's pretty unbelievable. We have a website specifically designed for people who, and we do live in a time where people, whether it's high school kids who are building their resume for college, or individuals that are in a semi-retired stage, or any number of things. When they can give back, I do believe people give back. And our Volunteer for Veterans program, and the website is spelled out, volunteer4veterans.org. And when you go there, you can sign up as a volunteer. Now, you can volunteer however, you can customize it however you want. If you're a carpenter, you can put those skills down because there may be a veteran who needs a new porch or a new wheelchair ramp built. Any number of things. You can put down if you're skilled in certain areas or if you just want to help, you know, you want to pick something up for them, you want to, you know, help in a variety of ways. There, that program has been a huge term for DAV. We have a lot of volunteers. We have we want veterans to actually go there and realize that they can get somebody to come and assist them, whether shoveling their driveway, cutting their lawn, any number of things. Right? I mean, there's nothing too big or too small, I don't believe. So that voluntary services program is huge. But our volunteers that give up their time, when I say give up their time, there are many that spend 60 to 80 hours a week in a VA hospital helping. Wow. Whether it's in the records department or helping veterans, transporting patients around the hospital, whatever it is. But then our transportation program, every year DAV provides vans that we buy through Ford Motor Company because we've been a partner with Ford Motor Company since 1920, same amount of time we've been in existence, when Henry Ford donated Model Ts to veterans to go to their first national convention and in DAV. And so here we are 100 years later celebrating our 100th anniversary, and our voluntary services program is a huge thing. In 1987, 88, DAV took that program over from the VA because they said they were no longer going to provide transportation to veterans to and from their VA medical appointments. So DAV said, we'll take it. And so since that time, we've been providing free vans, or we've been providing vans free of charge to the VA And then providing the volunteer drivers who have to go through a program and qualified to be a driver. But they go to all of these rural parts of the country, pick people up and take them to and from their VA medical appointments who may not be able to make it otherwise. So millions and millions of hours and millions of miles have been driven out of the goodness of these people's hearts. But that's disabled veterans giving back to disabled veterans. And I just think that's a special aspect of DAV itself.
It is an impressive thing, and I know that the theme of veterans helping veterans is something that we hear about all the time, and I think that's a tribute to the dedication and the loyalty and the sacrifice that veterans are willing to make to help fellow veterans and to help make the system work, because we all know the VA has finite resources, and the organizations like DAV do so much. You know, I'm really impressed with all the programs you mentioned, and I wish you continued success in those. Now, we just got a few minutes more. Jeff, before we go, could you remind our listeners where they can find out more information about DAV with a website and anything else you'd like them to know?
Sure. I'm going to give you three pieces. DAV.org is our main website where you can see the overarching, you know, details about all of our programs and how to get involved, whether you want to donate to DAV, whether you want to be a volunteer. You don't have to be a veteran to go there. You don't have to be a disabled veteran. There's a variety of ways that people do and stay involved with DAV. So DAV.org is our main website. If you need employment assistance or you want to learn more about our employment program that we have, our job fair schedule, connecting with employers, our job search board, please go to www.jobs.dav.org. And if you have specific needs or assistance that you're requiring, questions that you may have about your VA matters, whether you want to file a claim for benefits, you want to learn more about how we can help you in that regard, you can connect with one of our national service officers through www.benefitsquestions.org.
Great. Those are three resources that I hope people will actually check out. Well, Jeff, we'd like to thank you so much for being our guest on the Veterans News Hour today, and we wish you and the DAV continued success in your very valuable work to help veterans and their families. And we'd like to extend the invitation for you to come back on our show anytime is convenient to you to update our listeners on new developments and new issues for veterans.
Anytime. It's been a pleasure. Certainly having a nice discussion with you guys and the listeners out there, because, again, we live in a time where people get overwhelmed with the resources that are out there, whether you're going online, who's the best one, who's the right one. At some point, you have to click the submit button, or, for lack of a better, and you have to connect with somebody. The one thing I would like people to know is for 100 years, DAV and all of the services and programs that I mentioned here today, and, of course, there's more that we could talk about in that regard, but all of those services and programs that we provide are done so free of charge to veterans and their families and always have been. And to be able to, and we receive no government funding in that regard. We're not an arm of the government. We get no financial support from them. And people often ask, well, then how are you able to provide those free services? And the answer is very simple. We are able to provide the services that we do to veterans and their families based off of the contributions and donations from a grateful nation. So to all of those that have contributed or will contribute to DAV, thank you so much. Because we're not able to provide those crucial services like our COVID-19 relief program, unemployment relief program, where we provide $250 one-time grants to service disabled veterans who go online at dav.org/COVID. If you're a service disabled veteran who lost your employment, go there, dav.org/COVID, and apply for your monetary grant. We can't do those types of things if it wasn't for a grateful nation. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. And listeners can donate if they go to dav.org. Is that correct?
Correct. That is correct.
Very good. We'd like to thank Jeff Hall, the Director of National Employment for DAV, for being our guest today. Jeff, We wish you and DAV the greatest continued success in the future. Thank you again.
Hey. Thank you so much, and call anytime.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
Well, thanks again to Jeff Hall for being on our show. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, that was very good, David. Good you grabbed Jeff. Let me, there's some bit of news here. Just want to, I know we're running out of time here, but the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs announced last Thursday, May 28th, that it will resume in-person compensation and pension C&P exams in select locations across the country. The VA Veterans Benefits Administration's contracted medical examination providers will immediately begin contacting veterans in selection locations with claims pending C&P exams to schedule exam appointments. Resuming C&P exams allows VA to continue delivering the benefits our veterans have earned, said Secretary Robert Wilkie. We're keeping the safety of veterans and our medical providers as our highest priority and have put a robust set of measures in place to ensure medical providers can safely conduct these examinations. Safety measures include COVID-19 screening for veterans and employees, physical distancing, and appropriate personal protective equipment to include face coverings and gloves. VA is working closely with its medical providers to ensure the safety of veterans and providers remains a top priority. VA will start conducting in-person exams within the next few weeks based on the availability of veterans in the following approved locations. I'll briefly go through them. White River Junction, Vermont, Syracuse, New York, Erie, Pennsylvania, Huntington, West Virginia, Danville, Virginia, Charleston, South Carolina, West Palm Beach, Florida, Johnson City, Tennessee, Cleveland, Ohio, Tomah, Wisconsin, Shorewood Hills, Wisconsin, Kansas City, Missouri, Little Rock, Arkansas, San Antonio, Texas, Fort Harrison, Seattle, Washington, Boise, Idaho, Las Vegas, Nevada, Tucson, Arizona, and Fargo, North Dakota. Veterans outside of these areas will continue to be served through telehealth appointments or the acceptable clinical evidence process, which includes a review of existing medical records to provide information needed to complete the claim whenever possible. Veterans within resumed services areas who do not yet feel comfortable receiving in-person exams may opt to schedule their exam for a later date without impact to their disability claim. No final action will be taken on a claim while required in-person exam is pending. I want to highlight that for our veterans because I'm getting calls all the time from my clients who are telling me about getting these phone calls to set up these teleconference examinations. And they're, you know, a couple of them told me that they were being strong-armed into having to do it through the teleconference as opposed to an in-person. And I've been advising my clients, if you want an in-person, and in fact, I'm recommending my clients get the in-person, wait so you can do the in-person, because I think it's going to be a more meaningful examination, especially if it's a mental exam for anxiety, depression, or post-traumatic stress. Or a physical claim. I mean, how are they going to be able to figure out the flexion on your knee by doing a teleconference? Have you do your own flexion at home? I don't think so. My concern, veterans, is this, and I just got one. I'm looking at my computer right now. I just got one where the person said to the client, well, we can probably just do this by reviewing your records. We might not even need to do the teleconference. That's hogwash. You want to get in and have your examination. Don't let them push it off. Don't let them, you know, COVID-19 is horrible. We all know that. But they can't hide behind it in lieu of eventually having an in-person examination. Please. Get the in-person examination. Back to you, David.
That's great advice, Rick. And I know it's caused a lot of confusion for veterans. And I'm concerned that the VA may be using the time crunch that a lot of veterans feel under because they want their claims decided. But at the same time, they want to make sure they get a thorough exam, and it puts the veterans in a difficult position because if they want to speed things up, they're risking getting a poor quality exam, and then if they don't like the result, what's left for them to do? To go into one of the decision review lanes, which can a whole host of things we've talked about in other shows, and we'll talk about in future weeks. Too,
David, this is a huge issue. I get this question at least a half a dozen sometimes a dozen times a day from my veterans. And I reiterate exactly what I just got finished saying on our podcast tonight.
Yeah.
Hold off, do the in-person. But it, you're right. It's a huge, huge issue.
Yeah.
And I don't want to accuse the VA of hiding behind this pandemic here. I'm certain that's not their motivation. But the bottom line is, veterans, hang on. You'll get your in-person exam and wait for the in-person exam. This business about, you know, we may not even need to have you come in or do a teleconference. We'll just review your records. That's hogwash.
Well, if I could say something that further shows the bind that the veterans are in, you know, at the beginning of April, the VA pulled from its website the public copies of the so-called DBQs, the disability benefit questionnaires, that they had been providing to veterans for the last decade. Literally dozens of these questionnaires, which veterans were encouraged to take to their private doctors to complete to try to speed up the claims process. Well, those are now off the VA website. It's basically the VA exercising more power over these exams and then doing the sort of things you just described, which is pressuring veterans to do these telehealth, these video, not in-person appointments, things that they criticized and used as a reason, one of multiple reasons, to pull the DBQs off the public website. So veterans are really between the old proverbial rock and a hard place. This is really contrary to the stated spirit of the Appeals Modernization Act that is now in full implementation. But in any event, it's something that we'll continue to track in the next weeks and months ahead as COVID continues to unfold. Now, before we go to the coaching and to care, just one quick bit of news I'll offer and then turn it back over to you, Rick. In other news affecting veterans relevant to this COVID-19, the VA announced last Thursday, May the 28th, that it's begun a national four-year study on the impact of COVID-19 on veterans to help address critical questions about the disease. The researchers are going to study data and biospecimens such as throat swabs and blood to learn how the virus that causes COVID-19 has affected veterans. And the idea, obviously, is to help the effort to advance the national effort to fight this disease. And this effort is being coordinated by the VA's Cooperative Studies Program and coordinated by the VA's Seattle Epidemiologic Research and Information Center. They've got centers in North Carolina, Connecticut, and Boston. They're all contributing to this four-year study. That's quite a forward investment of time, 4 years. You know, here we've been in the COVID-19 pandemic time frame for just a few months, and now they're looking at for a four-year study. So we'll see where that goes. All right, Rick, we're about out of time, so why don't you remind us about the Coaching into Care program.
Absolutely. The Coaching into Care. This program helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help the veteran. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I would like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. That number is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. All right, close us out there, David.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to our show, the Veterans News Hour. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Harley Law Group, which represents veterans and VA disability cases. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, for the great job he does every week. And we hope all of you will tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. Mountain Time, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com Station 1 for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, we hope you have a safe and healthy week. Until then, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.